Kia ora. Welcome to Lunch Money, the audio version of the live webinar that takes questions from our investors.
Welcome everyone to another week of Lunch Money. We do these every week at Thursday at lunchtime. So I'm Sonia, one of the co-founders of Sharesies, and this is Leighton, one of the co-founders of Sharesies. This is a chance for us to get in, give a bit of an update on what's going on in the markets, and also sometimes we're joined by a special guest. And today we're joined by Mike Taylor, who's the founder and CEO of Pi Funds. And so we'll have Mike joining us very shortly. And so before we kick into it, a reminder that if you have any questions for us, just submit them in the Ask a Question button down below. And while we have Mike with us, do think of some questions you'd like to ask him, because we will make sure we go through those near the end. And as well, we talk about a lot of things and we're trying to be super transparent, but nothing we talk about is personalized advice. We don't know your personal situation well enough to be able to be speaking directly to you. So that's no advice here. And the other housekeeping thing is just please be kind and respectful towards our speakers and your fellow viewers. Otherwise, we will have to remove you from the webinar. So just keep it a cool place to hang out. So I think that's it for the intro. We'll go to Leighton. You're going to give us the market update.
Yeah, I am. Thanks, Sonia. Apple shares are up apparently because Sonia's been buying a new computer. No, I'm joking. That's definitely not personalised advice on that, but there's a nice looking computer. The market update today. So in a briefing last week, the Reserve Bank of New Zealand, that's the RBNZ, said that it would have its funding for lending program. They've called this one FLP. They love their acronyms, the Reserve Bank. And this program is going to be ready in November with the final decision on deployment being made by its Monetary Policy Committee. Under the FLP, this is the funding for lending program, the Reserve Bank would lend to banks at around the OCR, so the official cash rate, with fewer conditions on how it should be passed on to businesses and households. So it's another option the Reserve Bank have up their sleeve to help stimulate the economy when things are a little bit tough. Tourism New Zealand released a model this week predicting that the international market won't fully recover until at least 2024. However, they are predicting that the domestic travel will bounce back from this November, peaking in January at 18% above normal. So a lot of people obviously indicating that their normal international travel plans are turning into ones around the country. In business news, so the supply chain logistics company Mainfreight, that I'm sure many of you are shareholders in, provided a trading update to the market. The highlights included estimate revenue of $1.6 billion, that's up 7.2% on the same period last year, and also estimated profit before tax of $102 million, which is up 23.4% on the same period last year. Mainfreight said there was improving customer and sales demand with particularly strong growth in both Australia and Asia. The other business we'd like to highlight today is a company called Paysource, which is a SaaS company, that means software as a service. It's an employment solutions provider. It released their market update for the 3 months ended September 2020, and its highlights included recurring revenue. Recurring revenue is the revenue that they're expected will continue into the future, is now $519,000, which is up 52% on the same quarter last year. They also have now have 3,085 clients using the Paysource product, and that's up 9% since June 30, 2020, the last time they reported on it. So that's our market update to you. I'll hand over to Sonia to introduce Mike.
Certainly, Mike will join us shortly. So Mike is the CEO and founder of Pi Funds. It's about P-I-E, like pie, and it's lunch money. So it'd be good to welcome Mike when he joins the chat. He's going to talk to us a bit about what he does. Oh, here he is.
Hey, Mike.
Welcome, Mike.
Hi. How are you?
Great. Thanks for joining us. So gave it, you know, a bit of an update, your name and where you work and your role. But it's always good to hear from you and about, you know, can you introduce yourself? Who are you? What do you do and what's your story?
Sure. Okay. So I'm Mike, and I'm the founder of Pi Funds, and also of the Juno KiwiSaver scheme, which we operate as well. We've got two brands, and got into the business. Well, started Pi, you know, in the back office in the shed, I guess, 13 years ago in 2007, with just a 10 clients, mainly friends and family, and a little bit of money. And it's grown fantastically every year since then. So without wanting to kind of go through every point along the journey, unless you really want to know, we've got about 10,000 members in our KiwiSaver scheme now, a couple of thousand in Pi funds, and we manage about 1.5 billion of money.
I'm guessing to start an investment company, you would have come from an investment background. Were you in that world beforehand?
Yeah, I was one of those kids at school who was always really interested in money. I remember as a teenager saying to my parents that, could they tell me how much money they spend on me, and then could they just give that to me instead? And then I would decide how it got spent so I could allocate some money to the share market. They didn't like that idea. But I was kind of buying my first shares at about 18. So as soon as I got enough money from a job, borrowed some money from an interest-free bank loan at the time and bought my first shares in the NZX.
Is that on the NZX or in the NZX company?
Do you know what? I actually did buy some in the NZX in the IPO. Yeah.
Wow. And so so interesting you got into investing in such a young age. What kind of took you there?
Well, it wasn't really anything in the home environment. My parents really had no interest, so it wasn't coming from them. I can't really put it down to anything. I just like the idea of being able to make money without having to do anything. That was the main attraction for me, you know, because when you're that age, you know, you're a student or something. Basically, your work is all kind of manual labor, right? You know, you're serving people coffee, or you're gardening, or you're doing something really physical. And so I had this job once when I was about 17, and I was working in a refrigeration factory, and I had a job of sweeping the floor. And I just remember thinking, oh, there's got to be an easier way to make money. So, you know, I kept focusing on what was the easier way for me to make money, and just really built up my investing skills and honed those often from the library, just going to the library and just getting out a book on investing, learning what I could, and then starting to apply that.
Very cool. That's probably a good thing to start talking about what you actually do now. So we're going to use this interview for a bit of jargon busing for everyone, Mike. So you're a fund manager, so obviously all the funds with Pi, and also with Juno KiwiSaver. A lot of people may not even understand that KiwiSaver is a managed fund, and that's the sort of entity that's used for that. So can you tell us a little bit about what a fund manager does?
So there's actually lots of jobs at a fund manager. So you could be doing client services, you could be doing accounting, you could be an investment analyst, or you could be the fund manager. So the fund manager's job is that you've got, well, a fund is effectively a trust, like a unit trust. And when you're a KiwiSaver member, or when you go into a managed fund, you get issued with units in that trust. And then the fund manager's job is to make investment decisions on behalf of all the KiwiSaver members, or on behalf of all the people in the fund. And so you typically will have a investment strategy that you need to follow, which you've told all your investors about, because that's why they've gone to invest with you. So you might say, hey, I'm investing in US tech stocks. So people expect, you know, the fund to do what it says on the tin. So you would say, okay, well, I'm a fund manager. My strategy is US tech stocks, so I know what my investment universe is. Now I'm going to go and research all those tech stocks in the States to find out which ones I want to hold in the portfolio to be able to deliver a better return than someone could get if they did it themselves, or if they just invested in an ETF.
Great. I guess now that we're talking those strategies, because Sharesies investors can currently access two of the Pi funds that you manage on the Sharesies platform. So they are the Pi Funds Australasian Dividend Fund and also the Pi Funds Global Climate Fund, which I guess both have a few things on the tin that might explain what they do, but maybe you could just talk us through a little bit of what strategies you deploy with those and why you decided to build those funds.
Yeah, well, we've got 9 funds. We're trying to get another few onto the platform. So hopefully that will happen in the next couple of months. So the Australasian Dividend One has been running for about 9 years, I think. And its focus, as it says, is on companies in Australia and New Zealand that pay a dividend. So that doesn't necessarily mean that they have to be boring companies. We also look for growth businesses and growth companies. So the other thing about that particular fund is that the companies are generally a little bit smaller, so probably not necessarily household names. The Climate Friendly Fund has got, we've actually renamed that to Global Growth 2, but it's still focusing on being climate friendly, with exclusions such as fossil fuels, as well as following PIE's ESG policy, which has got about 6 things which we exclude. Interesting, one of the things we exclude is New Zealand illegal drugs. So it'll be, we may have to change what we can invest in potentially after the referendum.
Right.
So that fund focuses on global companies that are household names. So in that we might have, we could have something like Zoom or Tesla, or we've got this business called NextEra Energy Partners, which is installs solar and wind farms across the states. That's a bit different to the Australasian products.
Right. And are they all listed on exchanges, or do you do some private deals as well?
No, everything we invest in is listed on a market somewhere.
That's great. Thanks. So you've been an investor for a while now. What are the biggest lessons that you've learned through your investing journey? And if you could leave everyone listening to a few tips, what would those be?
Biggest lessons are that, you're going to lose money on something. That's obvious. And just trying to make sure that when you do lose money on a particular investment deal, that you go back and analyze that and to work out, why did I lose money? Was it because I was overconfident? Was it because there was something wrong with the business? Did I get the market timing right? Try and ascertain what it is you got wrong and learn something from it, because if you don't learn from it, you'll just repeat the same mistake. What I've tried to do as well is always just invest in something that you understand, and invest in something that you can see that everyone's using. So when I was growing up, that how I put that into practice was I could see that there were lots of warehouse stores opening. And whenever I went into the warehouse in the late 90s, it was full. So therefore, I thought the warehouse would be a good investment. And, at the time, clearly, it was. You look today, and one of the things we went through when COVID hit was we thought about who's going to be a beneficiary of COVID. And so if you looked at how lifestyles were changing, you could quite easily come up with a list of companies that would be beneficiaries of COVID. 2 really obvious ones are Netflix and Zoom. So if you could see that you're using Zoom all the time, or that you're always on Netflix, then probably everyone else is too. So therefore the business is going to be doing well. Therefore, it's going to make a good investment. Likewise, if you look at things the other way, you might say, look at Sky TV. And a couple of years ago, maybe 5 years ago, almost every household had Sky. It was pretty much your only option. And then things started to change. And so you can realize, actually, well, maybe Sky is not a good investment anymore. Even though potentially their profits might have been holding up, you could see that there was a trend away from that. So I like to think of investing as common sense. Apply your common sense and you can make good investments. If you try to overcomplicate it, or you don't understand what you're investing in, then you should avoid it.
Right. That's great. Thank you. Sonia, my hand over to you, ask a few questions.
That's really interesting, I think, around, because I'm going to dive a bit more into what it's like to be a fund manager. But I think, you know, fascinating to hear about your tips and how those apply. And you know, obviously you frame them as, you know, because our investors invest on behalf of themselves. What's it like to do that same thing on behalf of so many other people when, the things that you've observed feel so personal to you?
Yeah, well, when you invest your own money, if you get it wrong, you know, it's only going to affect you. And if when you're investing other people's money, one, if you get it wrong, they can turn up with pitchforks outside the office. Or two, you can actually
get jailed. Has that happened?
No pitchforks, but there's definitely been angry people, you know. Investing has its ups and downs, and people don't like when there's downs. So, yeah, over the last 15 years, there has been people who have been angry. We have a bad month. But, yeah, that's the nature of investing. And also, you know, it is pretty serious what we do. We have to have lots of controls and checks in place, you know, things like insider trading, complying with NZX regulations, following the FMA's guidelines. You know, those things are all really important. And if they're not followed, then, as I said, it's jail time. So, yeah, it's a bit more pressure than just punting your own money.
Serious stuff.
Yeah.
So looking at your investment process and just digging into that a bit more, I think it was mentioned that, and this is a direct kind of quote thing around believing you invest in companies or you look for companies where you believe the market has mispriced them relative to the company's outlook. Can you explain what you mean by that and the types of things you look for?
Yeah, so a good way of thinking about things is that when you look at the share prices of a company, theoretically all known information is in the price. For anyone who's listening, who's maybe done a finance degree or is at university, we talk about the efficient market hypothesis, which basically means that, yeah, all known information is the price. There's no advantage for anyone because everything's out there. However, when I talked before a little bit about common sense investing, and we go back to COVID, when we first looked at something like Zoom, people would say, oh, I don't want to buy Zoom because it's really expensive. And so at that time, the market was saying, if I just make it really simplistic, that it was going to grow its revenue by 25%. That's what was in the price. That's how everyone was looking at it. But the way we looked at it was we're saying, okay, well, maybe they don't grow their revenue by 25%. Maybe they grow it by 200% or 500%. What happens to the price then? I say, oh, well, it's going to go up. When we analyze something, we were trying to work out what everyone else thinks. And do we think differently to everybody else or the consensus of the market? And when we think differently, then we feel that we've got an advantage, and then we will use that advantage to buy or sell something. Basically, it's in a nutshell.
So also you touched on your ESG policy before and talking about how you do have investments that have an ESG layer on top of them. ESG stands for Environmental Social Governance, just for anyone who's listening. And can you tell us a bit more about what your policy looks like?
We've got a series of exclusions. We didn't already talk about the fossil fuels for the Climate Friendly Fund. But we also exclude, I like to call it kind of WMDs, weapons of mass destruction, but kind of controversial weapons is another way of looking at it. Manufacturers of guns. We avoid, as I said, what we classify currently as New Zealand illegal drugs. We don't invest in pornography. We make sure that, not only are we looking for certain exclusions, we're also looking for how the company is run itself, whether actually that it has appropriate levels of governance in the business. And if we don't feel that it does, then we won't actually make that investment. So we have a committee that goes, there's an overlay that they go and look at all the investments we've had and see if there's anything specifically on the list which might not flag up as an exclusion, but we might go, okay, well, we're not really happy with the practices of that particular business, flag it to the portfolio manager, it'll be discussed and potentially sold.
And then obviously this year there's been a lot of volatility in the share market with COVID. How's that been like as a fund manager, and can you tell us a bit about how did you adapt and respond and to what you've seen this year?
I think it's been even more exciting than 2008 when I was investing back then. The difference is 2008 was just all down. So at least this year we've had to get to experience both types of markets, down and then back up. It's also given us the real opportunity to show our edge in terms of performance. So the main difference between Pi and many other managers is that we're active. We're really active in what we do. And typically we'd actually hold that many businesses. So, you know, you buy an ETF, it might have 500 companies in there. You know, our portfolios might only have 25 to 30. Sorry, I think it's popped up on my screen. So that's a much more concentrated portfolio, and we are really looking for key ideas that we can find. So as I said earlier on in the chat, when COVID hit, obviously, like everyone else, we had to work out where we were going to work. And sure enough, doing investment analysis at home was not only possible, but actually quite enjoyable, particularly because the weather was really, really good at that time of the year, if you remember. So it was quite nice to be sort of doing that at home. It did mean some really long hours because markets were extremely volatile and the investment team had to kind of get up in the night to work out what was going in the US. When it comes to investing, almost everything is led out of the US. So if you want to know what's going on in the world, you have to follow that market. So, yeah, some long hours, some long 16-hour days to get through. But then we sort of sat down, worked out what was in our portfolio, what we want to get rid of, which was going to struggle through COVID, and then worked out what were going to be the beneficiaries. And then we kind of made a call as well that things were going to be okay. We viewed that the JobKeeper, you know, the stimulus from the central banks, Reserve Bank, was enough to see us through. And also that unlike sort of a financial crisis where the banking sector, the financial sector goes under, this was like an earthquake or a one-off event that we'd get over and we'd probably learn to get over and adapt to quite quickly. So I think we have done that. And so from an investment perspective, we want to go, what are the changes going to be? How is consumer behavior going to be affected? So let's invest in things to take advantage of that. One really cool way that we took advantage of that is we thought, I was on a call and we were talking about bikes. And I was like, oh yeah, I'm on my bike all the time. I just bought a new e-bike. And then someone said, okay, well, let's go and look up bike manufacturers. So we ended up buying Giant in Taiwan because, you know, they were benefiting from more people, you know, utilizing bikes. So that's kind of what we did.
That's a cool story.
So, Leighton, I think, do you want to... Do you have any questions or we could kick into the...
Yeah, I think just looking at time, we might hum straight into... we've got quite a few questions here as well from the people listening today, Mike. So the first one is from Elliot. So what are your favourite books you've read on investing, and do you know any good books more focused on New Zealand investing specifically?
There's not that many, but they've been published on New Zealand specifically. There's a few probably come out of Mary Holm and Martin Hawes. Not much other than that. My favourite book is One Up on Wall Street by Peter Lynch. He was a big time investor through the 80s and 90s. And his philosophy was the one I mentioned earlier about kind of buying something that you understand. Here's a quote, like it says, buy a business that any idiot can run because sooner or later any idiot will run it. So, yeah, it was, that's kind of his philosophy. And he, because in the States, you know, you can go and find something where there's like, it might have a, you know, like recently what's been doing well, like Chipotle, and you just see the massive just rollout of these restaurants and you can see how it's taking over the country. You go, oh, that's a good buy. So you can really do that over there. And so that was his investment style, and that's what I liked. You can always learn a lot from Warren Buffett. He's the world's greatest investor, so those are always good ones to read.
Great. Thank you. The next one, I'm interested, Mohan has asked any plans to float a cryptocurrency fund, but our listeners are normally interested in our speaker's thoughts on crypto generally, so that's a twofold question for you.
No plans for crypto fund. At the moment, we prefer to favour gold over that. So we've got some gold in our portfolios.
Right.
Cryptocurrency.
And do you have any thoughts on cryptocurrency generally or where that's heading? Or?
I've got no view.
Right. Right. Cool. How do you analyse a company before you buy its shares? You've sort of talked about this, but maybe quick fire, sort of shortened version of some of those specific tips that people after here. This one from Michael.
Okay. So let's maybe use Giant Bikes as an example. So we've got to come up with the investment idea from somewhere. It could be some crazy thing like we're using bikes, or it might be that we've been sent a piece of research from a broker. So then once we've got the idea, it doesn't matter where it's come from, someone in the team will go and look at it, and they'll do some kind of high-level quick numbers as to say, what's the company currently valued at? What do they really do? How much are they going to grow? And then we'll kind of circle back to say, okay, well, this is the information we have. This is what the market thinks of the business. Are we different from the market? Do we think it's worth more? Do we think it's worth less? If we think it's worth more, then it's a buy.
Right. Great. Thank you. Next one's from Margaret. What is the minimum amount that she needs to have in Pi Funds managed through Sharesies? I might answer that one. Margaret, that's 1 cent. With no minimum there to manage it through Sharesies. The next one is from Morgan. Advice and tips for investing at a young age. Have you got any of those, Mike?
Yep. Because I've been trying to get my young kids into investing. And with actually limited success, believe it or not. But what I would say is just think about things that you really enjoy. Because I did say to him, I said, oh, what do you want to buy? And he says, oh, just can you find me like a list of gaming stocks? And then I'll choose one from that. But so I would say just keep it interesting for yourself. So find something that you're interested in life, and then go and find a really good company out there. And then pick that one to invest in as a place to start and add to your portfolio from there.
Great, thank you. Next one is from Darren. So the Juno KiwiSaver has one of the highest annual returns compared to the handful of KiwiSaver providers in New Zealand. How have you achieved that, and what makes you different from the other providers?
So the how we achieve the returns, just kind of the same way, I guess, as we've been talking about, is we've got this strategy where we're active. A number of the KiwiSaver providers are passive, which basically means you will get the return of the market, whatever the market is, whereas we're trying to beat the market through our investment expertise. We're holding less businesses, so we're more concentrated, and we want to be more we kind of feel like we'd rather put money into our best idea than our 500th best idea kind of thing. So we concentrated in our picks, and being active, we're looking to, like I said, 2020 has been great for us because we've been able to shift our investment strategy a number of times throughout the year to take advantage of the effects of COVID. So that's kind of how we've delivered really good numbers in the last 12 months.
Great, thank you. You've planted a few seeds here with some people, so will there be other PI funds added to Sharesies? They see them at the moment. So I'll answer that as well. We are actually discussing at the moment of the other PI funds, and we'll be looking forward to getting those on the platform as soon as we get some capacity. So as with everything we talk about here with features and new products, it falls into a priority. So the more you ask, the more likely it is. So send us a message for things that you'd specifically like. There's a great question here following on from our one about young kids. So this is from Nassim. And it's the advice and tips for investing at not so young
age. Again, it's kind of pretty similar to a younger person as well. I still think it would be good to invest in things that you love and understand and focus on that thing first, because even though, you know, investing requires a certain level of skill to make the investment decision, you as a consumer will often know far more than me about a particular thing. So, you know, let's just say that you were really interested in furniture manufacturing. I don't know anything about furniture manufacturing, but there's probably lots of listed companies that manufacture furniture. And then maybe you might want to think, okay, well, I know a lot about furniture because that's my job and I'm in my 50s. And then you might try and think, okay, well, what about doing this digitally? Because there are now actually, believe it or not, people are buying a lot of furniture online. No one needs to go into the store. You don't need to go to Harvey Norman anymore, right? So you might just say, okay, great. Well, that's my thing. Now I find a company that's doing it digitally. So I'm going to choose that as my first investment. The only difference, I guess, about being 50 versus being 20 is you need to think a little bit more about your risk profile. You don't put all your life savings into one stock, whereas when you're 20, you probably can and get away with it in case it goes wrong. At 50, you need to be more conservative. You need to think about, okay, retirement's 15 years away. I can't take too much risk. That's the main difference.
Great, thank you. The next one's from Stephen, which is on another comment you've made. So why are you investing in gold?
We're investing in gold because of what's happening with global interest rates. And when interest rates are particularly low, and when there's been a significant amount of money that's been created, the money supply has been expanded, we believe that that might either would do one of two things: potentially create inflation in the future, in which case gold would be a good asset to hold, or with interest rates so low, there's not many alternatives to invest in, and gold has traditionally been one that's kind of considered a bit of a safe haven. So low interest rates, if something goes wrong in the market, we feel we have some safety in gold. So it's kind of a hedge both ways.
That brings us very nicely into the next question from Elliot, which is, what are some of the best ways to hedge for New Zealand investors?
Well, that would depend what you're trying to hedge. So if you're trying
Maybe we could start with a description of what a hedge is.
It's something that grows in a Japanese garden. A hedge is when you are trying to offset an investment, the risk of an investment that you've got. So if you've got shares in US stocks, to hedge the risk that might go down, you could short the market, or you could buy put options. So those are options where if the market goes down, you make money. So that's kind of what a hedge is. Hedging New Zealand is a little bit harder. We don't have a derivatives market for New Zealand, for the New Zealand exchange. You would have to hedge via international markets. We can hedge the currency.
Great. Thank you. And a lot of people use sort of like natural hedges in their portfolio as well on Sharesies with the two markets, and particularly around the currency protection. And of course, a lot of the managed funds have hedging included as part of what they're trying to do. So the fund managers are doing it. Could be a good blog for us to write at some time, maybe a bit of a deep dive into hedging. What next one's from Mohan. So what is your market share in number one, KiwiSaver funds, and two, your other funds, if you know those?
Excuse me. Our market share will be pretty small. So we've got 10,000 members in KiwiSaver, and there's 3 million people in the scheme. But we are growing pretty rapidly. So, yeah, we're adding about currently about 30 to 35 people a day are joining us in our KiwiSaver scheme, which is great. So where our aim is to continue to take market share off the big banks because their fees are higher and their performance is worse.
Yeah, I was going to say, I read a good article this morning, I think, highlighting Juno and its low fees. So you never know, you might get a few more this week with a few of our listeners here. What percentage of your fund is accumulation of stocks versus buying and selling?
So typically we buy something and we hold it till we don't want to hold it anymore. And that might be because something's gone wrong. Occasionally we have to sell. For example, one of the investments we bought into is Afterpay, and that's we bought into that under $10. Now it's, I haven't seen it today, it was pretty close to 100. So if you've got an investment that goes up 10 times, you have to sell some. Otherwise, it becomes too big a percentage of your portfolio. That's the kind of the difference, I suppose, as a managed fund versus on buying something on your own, is if you buy a business, you know, with your own money, your own account on Sharesies, you can just hold it forever. Whereas managed funds, we've got restrictions. We can't have maybe one position can't be more than, say, 10% of the overall fund. To make sure we're not taking too much risk.
And that's all regulated, is it?
Or is that part of it? Yeah.
Great. Thanks so much, Mike. Just looking at the time, we might just leave the questions there and get Sonia to wrap up.
Yeah, cool. Thanks heaps for tuning in, everyone. And thanks a lot, Mike, for being here. Fantastic conversation, cool stories, and lots of insight with the questions. So thanks. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, thank you. Really enjoyed it.
Excellent. So next Thursday we'll be here and we'll be joined by Janae Tibshirani from interest.co.nz for a very special episode of Lunch Money all about the New Zealand election and its impact on the share market and the wider economy. So no doubt will be a really interesting chat and things that'll be top of mind for people, which I guess take a moment to say go out and vote if you haven't, get out there. And join the conversation. So we'll pop a link in the chat to register for next week, but that's a wrap for today. Thanks again, Mike.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Thanks, everyone.
For more info, visit www.sharesies.nz or find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Ka kite anō. Take care and happy investing.